Hey everyone, welcome back to The Growth Signal, where we are redefining customer relationships, how we build them, how we keep them, and how we continue to lead as customer expectations rapidly evolve. I'm Alyssa Nolte.
And I'm Christine Lothar.
And we are going to get right into it today. Christine, what is your hot take?
Yes, well, Alyssa, thank you so much for having me. It's such a privilege to be on the show. My hot take is centered around customer success. And today, my hot take is that customer success is simply not just a department or team, but it is actually the operating system of a modern business.
That is kind of a spicy take. I like it. Okay, so tell me more. In what way do you think that customer success has evolved into that kind of a role? And when did the transition happen?
Absolutely. So if you take a step back and you think of the SaaS business model, organizations that operate as a SaaS function, they cannot survive without retention. So you can have the most phenomenal marketing team, you can have an elite sales function, but if an organization is undergoing the dynamic where they have customers coming in, but then they're churning, the company at large cannot survive. Full stop. And so a lot of times CS functions are then defaulted to the responsibility of fixing retention, fixing that churn. And this is where I like to reframe it or challenge that perspective and say, I often think that's a signal to the larger business or to the organization overall to say, where are there opportunities across the entire customer experience where we can prove better alignment internally and value externally? And so under that lens, CS acts as a really strong operating system to connect and support, absolutely support retention, but they are not the sole owners. Again, because the entire organization needs to rally.
Yeah, there's something to be said for what I think of as capital customer success, right? The department, the team, the function, and the idea of lowercase customer success in terms of like the, just the general concept of how we approach relationships with your customers. Because some of the things that I hear from people in CS roles is, hey, we have no budget. We're the first to get cut, right? Sales gets everything. I was talking with someone just yesterday who does customer success enablement, and she was talking about how she got a little portion of the sales enablement budget to run this customer success thing. And she was kind of lamenting, like, if retention is the highest priority for the SaaS companies, then why is all of the money getting spent on acquisition rather than retention?
That is really interesting. Absolutely. I think it should be an organization-wide call to action and mission. Again, because if you connect back to the why, the entire organization, they not only need the net new growth, but they need the recurring revenue in order to survive.
Yeah, I think I've started to notice businesses are really pivoting hard towards that, right? Because I've been in this industry for about 10 years now. And full transparency, I've always been on the sales side. So I've always been the recipient of those larger budgets and more opportunities. And, you know, when I was kind of growing up in business, it was definitely get a customer at all costs, do whatever it takes to keep that customer getting humming in the door, make promises that you can't really keep, stretch the truth just a little bit. Nobody said those things out loud, but it definitely was implied. And now we're seeing a shift in the industry in investor priorities and CFO priorities of exactly your point, recognizing that it's a lot cheaper to keep a customer than to keep trying to fill your pipeline.
Absolutely. And not only keep a customer, but how do we continue to nourish and support them on their own journey so that they can continue to grow with us as they evolve? How critical and important is that?
So if I'm a leader and I want to start reimagining or moving or getting my entire team on board of the idea of customer success is the operating system of our organization, what is the first thing you would have them do to start that journey?
I think from a leadership standpoint, it's incredibly important that leaders across different departments come together and get in alignment of we all rally behind not only growth, but maintaining revenue. And how can we be really honest in how we collaborate today? And where can we start to improve? This is where I think cross collaboration is essential, because do we have strong partnerships? Are we communicating openly and transparently? And are we mutually supporting each other? So if we think about like a marketing function, CS should be in a great position where they have deep relationships with customers. They know them. Are we able to funnel up brand ambassadors, drive engagement to upcoming events, make sure campaigns are getting a lot of support and highlights, right? How can we function better and all rally around? We are all in this together, and that us as leaders need to communicate and build a strong partnership.
You know, you mentioned a few different cross-functional groups there, but if I'm a CS leader, I'm trying to figure out where I can start to build that web of breaking down those silos and connecting in for the good of our customer. Where would you have me prioritize my relationships? Is it with marketing? Is it with sales? Is it who do I need to start becoming friends with?
Absolutely. I would focus on product, sales, and marketing. In addition to that, other functions matter as well, like support, like legal, like operations. I don't think there's one that quite literally is not important. I think they all are extremely important.
Yeah, and that comes back to, you know, I think sometimes we get in our own mode of what's important to us, right? But in reality, we are an organization and, you know, to extrapolate a little bit there, almost like an organism, right? Like if I don't have both of my ears, I can't hear, right? If I don't have my mouth, I can't speak. And so if we start treating our organization like several functional, important pieces rather than, you know, I'm just the hand, I'm just the foot.
Absolutely. And this is where I think having leaders with a strong vision and that they can get in the weeds when they need to, but they can also step out and look at the entire forest and say, for the entire business sake, what do we need to do to become better?
And I think that's actually a really hard thing to do, right? Because I don't know about you, but sometimes I get like really on something that I'm focused on. I'm hyperfixated on it almost. And sometimes it's hard to take a step back, especially if you care about what you're working on.
100%. People naturally, we get drawn to where we have to focus. And a lot of times people have to put out many fires throughout the day or have a huge to-do list. But what I personally like to do is always connect back to overarching organizational goals. So what is the company at large driving towards and how is what I'm doing? Is it laddering up to it or not? And then on top of that, just having the structure in place. So do I have an opportunity? Do I have a regular meeting cadence with other leaders in the business to talk about how we are all coming together from a structural standpoint that kind of helps drive accountability, I think.
What do you think is the biggest blind spot CS leaders have when it comes to customer success?
Hey, that's a great question. I think the biggest blind spot is that the most talented CS professionals that I see today, they're bilingual in the sense that they could not only speak to product, functionality, ROI, timeline, things like that. So they can do that. But they can also emotionally speak to customers, meaning they have this duality where they can help build momentum in making sure customers feel heard, making sure customers feel like they are progressing and their success, making sure customers have that emotional connection.
Yeah, I like the idea, and I've never really thought about it before, but as customer success is almost the bilingual translator of the technical minutiae to the actual human connection of what we're trying to do. And that's such an important thing because I'm a firm believer that we as people make emotional decisions and then rationalize it with quantitative fact or technical fact, right? And so understanding how you can read people's emotional decisions or at least tease them out and then help them connect that to the value that they're actually getting.
I love that you brought this up, Alyssa, so much. If I could get nerdy for a minute here.
Hell yeah, let's do it.
Let's do it. From an evolutionary psychology standpoint, humans are emotional-based beings. So over time, our species has evolved pretty tremendously, but the wiring in our brain has not. And humans experience emotions before logic. And that's just literally how stimuli travels up through our brainstem and then into our brain. And so this is why we have, you know, sayings like hindsight is 20/20, because we often have a knee-jerk emotional response to something. So we say and do something. And then later when logic taps in, we're like, oh, I could have handled that differently. I should have responded better. But whether we're at work or at home, we carry this large emotional way of how we process information.
Yeah.
And so
I think, go ahead. I was just going to say, I think people look at it and say, well, I'm emotional about my friends and my family and my pets and these things that are my personal life. And they don't realize that they're emotional about things as small and minutiae as like the software that you're using every single day, right? Whether or not you want to admit it, you are making emotional decisions about your purchase decisions, your retention decisions, and rationalizing with return on investment or stats after the fact.
So think you could have the most beautiful dashboard ever, but if I actually don't feel like it's useful.
Right. Whether it is or not. Right.
It doesn't matter. You know, right. I could have the greatest product available to purchase, but if I don't actually feel like it makes me better or makes my business produce something better, it doesn't matter. So yes, humans, we take ourselves wherever we go. And our decisions, both big and large, think about the biggest decisions a human will make, like who they marry or a home, maybe the largest purchase. There's an emotional component to that. There's also an emotional component to work and how we show up and how we socialize and how we interact. And especially too, in this macroeconomic environment, I would also argue that purchasing software or services, it really matters. Those are big decisions.
Yeah.
And how somebody experiences a person or an organization absolutely matters.
Yeah, there's almost like, and I don't know if you're seeing this, I work on the research side, right? So we do a lot of research on the neuroscience behind buying, by the buying process, which I love because it's so fun to like peel back the layers of onions on people. But one of the things that we have found is there's been a transition to almost personifying the brands that we work with. Right? Making decisions about the brand, not necessarily just because of what we do, but because we like them and we feel like they like us and they're true to who they are and true to what they do. And they, and all of these things that we used to describe people, we are now using the same attributes and personality archetypes to describe the brands we're working with.
That's so incredibly interesting.
Isn't it wild? Like you wouldn't think it though, but we're seeing it time and time again. It's happening in technology, it's happening in AI, especially as we start to build like parasocial relationships with these AI chatbots.
Agents.
Yeah, I just watched a TikTok where some guy has like he like proposed essentially to his AI. So we're getting a little too far down the road here for me in terms of like personification of our technology. But it happens with political candidates and all of the things that, you know, really have a big impact on our life and your decision. You have to either decide that you're going to make an emotional decision and understand that or try to make a rational one. But it's not easy to separate the two.
They're highly interwoven and they're happening all day. If you think of like a ping pong ball, you can be in one conversation and we can pivot to talking about features and functionality and logic. Mm-hmm. And then we can talk to, well, how do you think this senior leader will feel about the implementation?
Yeah.
Can the organization adapt to this change? Do we have the cultural dynamics where people can do it? Those are all emotional elements. And so it's just happening all day, every day. And ultimately, though, it's all of our brains just working as designed.
Yeah. I always tell people, too, like, your brain is also very lazy. Like, if it can find a shortcut to making a decision, it's going to find that shortcut. Right? So we see that in, you know, the concept of, like, you buy things from people you like or people who are like you. And you feel some kind of, like, all of those principles of persuasion. Right? You feel indebted for them giving you something, right? And it's always interesting to see how people don't even realize that they're taking these decision-making shortcuts, especially when it comes to their renewal decisions.
Yeah.
So how have you seen, I'd love to just talk about the psychology of it because I know you and I both share that interest. What do you think is like the psychology of the renewal and how can CS organizations take what we know about how people make decisions and use it to make their operating system more effective?
You brought up a really great point about people being very habit focused. I 100% agree. I think humans try to conserve energy and it's largely unconscious so that in the moments we need physical or intellectual energy, we have it. And so this is where the power of habit comes into play. What are the habits you're doing? Do they serve you or not? And as we think about this through a lens of not only driving growth, but driving renewal and keeping retention going through a business, I think the power of habit starts early So I think it's part A of what are these habits we're building with customers, of how we interact with them, how we talk with them, how they experience us, whether it be a brand or a specific person, because those habits, the more we do things, they actually start to form some neural pathways in our brain, and then it becomes default. So as you think about what makes a renewal successful, is the partnership easy? Is time to value quick?
Yes.
Is it a hard decision, or is it, no, of course we're going to keep working with this. I love X person. I love X feature. This makes me so much more efficient. How can we start to ingrain the habits where it's a natural choice that allows them to conserve that intellectual and emotional energy rather than expand it?
So this goes back to your point about everyone having to own the idea of delivering on that customer success and customer success becoming the operating system. One of the things that drives me the craziest is when you like the product is easy to use, but the team surrounding the product is difficult. And so, for example, one of my least favorite things to deal with is procurement. I hate going through that process. And sometimes I will make a decision because, like, you know what? I just don't want to go through this process. I don't want to do the procurement piece of it. So I'm just going to move on. So I think, to your point earlier of, yeah, you might not be sales, might not be marketing, you might not be customer success, you might be legal or HR or procurement, but you can actually have a real impact on that renewal. Because if it's going to be a nightmare for me to renew with you from the legal paperwork side, I might just not do it.
Again, our brand's going to default to what is the most easiest solution.
Yeah.
And because we're emotional-based beings, we often remember how people make us feel, not always what they say. So if it's a difficult conversation, if it's going to be strenuous, if I'm going to leave feeling frustrated or that I'm not being heard, of course that can impact my decision.
Yeah. And, you know, if your software isn't that easy to work with, like it's a highly technical software, then your people side of your business is going to have to work overtime to make sure that you compensate for that lack of ease.
Excellent point. So this is where that whole collaboration of how could success potentially partner with product. So we're funneling and feedback. So we're getting the right people into things like a beta program to make sure the product is as optimal as possible.
Yeah. And exiting your own echo chamber, right? Because I've built products and you can get so laser focused on the thing that you think it should be and the way that you, because it's yours and it's your baby and it's your idea. But having your customers and bringing them into the conversation, that can change everything.
Absolutely. How can we open up our own blinds?
Yes. Yes.
That's essential.
And it's hard to do, right? Because sometimes you're going to hear things you don't want to hear or feedback that you're not ready to hear. But being open and honest and willing to say, hey, I don't know everything, but I'm willing to learn. That can be a huge change on how we grow our own and build, as you said, new neural pathways.
And make sure, again, we're connecting back to the overarching business. What
Yes.
does the business need? What does the business demand rather than what do I prefer in this moment or what is good for me?
Yeah.
I think that requires building business acumen over time. But I think, again, taking that step back and having that bigger picture focus can absolutely do some reframing for different people that may need it.
So what if I'm a CSM, I'm not a quote unquote leader, but I want to do my part to be easy to work with, to build cross-functional relationships. It's, you know, I'm not the leader, I'm not the boss, but I still want to do what I think is right based on this conversation. How do I start doing that?
I think it starts with just how you show up every day and how people experience you. So one, being open and regularly asking for feedback. A lot of times people are afraid to actually ask for feedback, but I very much view feedback as a gift of welcoming it. What can I do better? What's working in this partnership? What is not? That can open a lot of doors. That can also build trust and camaraderie, which I think is essential when you're working with different business partners. And also just asking a lot of questions and being curious. So how should we communicate? How do you like to communicate? What does good look like to you? What are your KPIs? What are your metrics? Sometimes we are so siloed, we don't even know what the other person is navigating or what standards they're held to. But we could find a lot of mutual agreement if you just tap into some curiosity.
Yeah. And I want to double click on a theme that you've been saying pretty much this entire conversation is connecting back your day-to-day moments to the organization's overall goals. Because to your point, if you don't have good business acumen, you might not realize one to even do that. or two, how to make that connection. So if I'm a fresh green CSM, how do I start to build that muscle, that reflex?
I think one, just being curious and asking. So if maybe let's say you're a junior CSM and you don't know, just ask your leader. So how do our KPIs ladder up to department goals or company goals? The leader should be able to articulate that in a clear, easy way. And then I think it's just through over time building exposure to data of how am I doing? How is the team doing? How is the department doing? What are our performance goals? How are we pacing? Are we meeting the forecast or falling behind? What are the things we measure? That can absolutely help build that as well.
What are you working on right now? What's the big hurdle in front of you?
Great question. I think there's always a multitude of things. Two things. Right now, I'm going through a process of actually hiring for a series of roles. And so it's a challenge of how could we always find an exceptional talent? And then how do we best nurture and develop individuals? So that's part A. And then part B, I will just say there's a big driver towards becoming exceptional in risk mitigation. So we're seeing many challenges in the environment with things like tariffs or customers wanting to become mindful of budget. How can we get ahead of that? And how can we thoughtfully mitigate?
Yeah, no, I think I've never heard it put that way, like that risk mitigation concept, but that makes sense, right? Because sometimes growth is just as much about protecting as it is about growing.
Absolutely.
Awesome. Okay, so thinking of all the incredible people that you know, that you've had a chance to meet, who is leading the charge? Who is changing the way we build relationships with our customers?
So I haven't had an opportunity to meet this individual, but I read his book last year and it has stayed with me. I've referred back to it so many times before my personal and professional life. There is a book called Super Communicators, and it's by an author called Charles Duhigg. And it's an easy read, but I found it to be so impactful. And essentially the premise is looking at people who are phenomenal at communicating. And sometimes we'll think they'll be super charismatic or extroverted or brilliant, but quite literally, they're just day-to-day people. Mm-hmm. There's many elements in the book that he goes over, but one of the key things he talks about is that these super communicators, is they just allow people to feel seen and heard, and they can meet them where they are in a conversation. So, for example, let's say, listen, I'm having a bad day and I come to you and I'm like, and then this happened and it started to rain and I forgot my umbrella. And you just go there with me and you allow me to vent rather than map out all the things I need to do and try and fix it for me in the moment. You match me. You meet me.
I always tell my husband, do you want sympathy or do you want solutions?
Yeah.
Right?
I
don't do it on purpose, but it's one of those things where it's like, I found myself as he was telling me things to immediately start trying to problem solve, right? So I come from a startup background. Everything is about, there's a problem, we'll find a solution, we'll work it out together, we'll brainstorm, we'll collaborate, all that. And really, he just wanted to like tell me about the things that were going on in his life. And I'm sitting there trying to basically like armchair quarterback his situation. And then I finally realized like he doesn't really want, he's just talking to me. He's not looking for help. And so I will regularly ask him, you know, as he's telling me stuff, I'm like, hey, I just want to make sure, sympathy or solutions? Which one is like, what are you looking for? Usually it's sympathy, but every once in a while he is looking for a solution. And I think that's exactly what you're talking, right? Meeting people where they are. And I think we can learn a lot from them as professionals, right? If I am coming to you as someone on the sales side, and all I'm doing is trying to listen to your problem so that I can pitch you my solution, well, that doesn't really make for authentic conversation.
That is my exact point. It sounds like you are a super communicator, one, because he calls.
I'm going to have to read the book. Yeah.
Yeah. He calls out in the book that people that are just strong at this, they will ask, they'll say like, do you want a solution or do you just want the space to vent? And then they meet that person. And then as a result, they can feel heard. Let's bring it to a business. If a customer doesn't actually feel heard, it's done.
Yeah.
So how can we make sure we are developing that and nourishing that within our talent?
And you can't really fake it. Like I used to work with a guy who he would go in with like his sales pitch of what he was going to say. And it didn't really matter what the customer said. He had a script that he was following. And it wasn't even like a if this, then that kind of a thing. it was literally like, these are the points I'm going to get out, and I don't really care what you're saying. And you could tell he wasn't listening. And it doesn't really matter if the customer did actually need that problem. You can tell as a human being that you're not being heard when you're having a conversation.
Through many ways, right? Through our body language and tone of voice. So many ways. We're feeding signals all day, every day. And to your point, exactly, humans feel it. So if you don't feel heard, if you don't actually feel valued, there's tremendous implications for that.
Yeah. Christine, if someone is really connecting with you, if they want to learn more, if they want to talk about customer success as the operating system, where can they find you online?
Sure. I am available on LinkedIn, and I'm happy to share my profile in the show notes.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining me on the Growth Signal. This was a really fascinating conversation.
Thank you.